From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Weather Wars, the Hollow Earth Theory, followed by the Shadow Government with Dr. Brooks Agnew. But here's what's happening. Well, it still gets scary, doesn't it? A new video from Al-Shabaab, that's a terrorist group in Somalia, shows that the terrorist group is now calling for an attack on the Mall of America in Minnesota. That's the huge mall there. The mall is one of three similar targets that the terror group specifically names, including the West Edmonton Mall in Canada and the Oxford Street shopping area in London. In a moment, Douglas Hagman from the Northeast Intelligence Network joins us as we talk about this latest terror threat. A 94-year-old man has been charged with almost 3,700 counts. That's right, 3,700 counts of accessory to murder in Germany on allegations that he served at Auschwitz. Prosecutors said the defendant was a former SS sergeant who acted as a medical officer at the Nazi concentration camp in 1944. If found guilty, he could face a jail term ranging from 3 to 15 years. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch American Horror Story, but Ben Wolfe had been on it. He played in the Freak Show. He is dead from a head injury he sustained last week. He was 34 years old. He's the 4 foot, 4 inch actor. He was struck in the head by a car mirror of an SUV while he was crossing a street in Hollywood last Thursday night. He was taken to the hospital then in critical condition. He has just died. A sauna does more than build up sweat. It can be a lifesaver, according to researchers. Middle-aged men who take frequent saunas are around half as likely to die from heart conditions as those who do not, according to the new study. Well, let's check in with the expert on the heart, Christian Wild. Why is this the case, Christian? This is a strange story.
Well, first of all, George, they said they didn't know. So I did some research on it. This therapy, it's been standard tenet of health among the Scandinavians, the Norwegians, and the Finns for centuries. Haven't we all known of the popularity of the Finnish bath?
Yes.
Well, an article that appeared in the Alternative Medicine Review some time ago also reported on the benefits of sauna therapy for congestive heart failure, for someone who had recently had a heart attack, was recuperating, for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, of which there's very little help, chronic fatigue, chronic pain, and those with hypertension, with one word of caution. Now, while a sauna maintains a temperature, George, of about 110 degrees, the steam rooms are kept about 180. And so it's not recommended for hypertension people to spend more than 10 or 15 minutes in the steam room. They may be safer and do better in the sauna. But because this is National Heart Month, George, and while this study is so important,
sure is,
while this benefit, how it is explained, I'd like to really give your listeners something special tonight for Heart Month, something that can literally save a life, possibly the life of someone you may never meet. Those of you who have hidden causes can find it in Chapter 47. A study out of Scandinavia, another study out of Scandinavia years ago, appearing in the Journal of Epidemiology in 1998, found, and listen to this, those people who gave blood twice a year by reducing their iron, their blood viscosity, as I keep saying, reduced their risk of a heart attack by an amazing 88%.
You've got to be kidding.
No.
Jeez.
Think about it, George. You save your own life. You save somebody else who needs that blood. And women who are postmenopausal and therefore no longer requiring the heavier iron loads need to enjoy this preventive protection also.
Maybe that's why vampires live so long, Christian, huh?
That could be it.
All right. I want to get your website out. This is Heart Month. MyHeartBook.com. Christian's a noted author and researcher, and he's got a couple books out there, Hidden Causes of Heart Attack, and I just want you to know he's putting them all on steep discount this month because of that. If you want to call him, he's at 866-STEM-123. eating peanut products as a baby dramatically cuts the risk of allergies, according to a study reported in the New England Journal of Medicine. A trial on 628 babies prone to developing peanut allergies found the risk was cut by over 80%. These just are amazing stories that keep coming out. Listen to this one, by the way. 24% of Americans have more credit card debt than emergency savings, and 13% are not much better off. They don't have credit card debt, but they don't have emergency savings either. Put another way, more than a third of Americans are living at risk of a financial crisis. Well, there's a guy who said, hey, I want to get a picture of myself in front of a moving train, right? So that's what he did out there in Oregon. Trouble is, he was struck and killed by another train that he didn't notice heading the other direction while he was waiting to get his picture taken. Around Jacksonville, Florida, more than 160 reports of bright fireball sightings clustered around Lake City, Florida over the weekend. Some witnesses were as far away as Georgia and South Carolina. Had to check in with Dr. Sky Stephen Cates on this one. What's this? Is this some kind of a phenomenon that we're involved with, or is this remnants of some kind of comet? What's going on out there?
Well, George, it seems it just gets better and better as we keep hearing these reports. And over the weekend, as people, as you reported, seeing, and not only seeing a bright fireball, George, it's my opinion, like many other astronomers, that we're seemingly moving into larger debris fields. That's pretty obvious. But I wanted to make a statement here on COAST for the audience that there are really two types of these bolides or fireballs. And in this particular case, there are sonic meteors. These are meteors that probably disintegrate, George, about 60 miles above the Earth's surface. And just like the lightning and thunder analogy, you hear the thunder after the lightning, people experience some of these sounds, and I quote, like a loud window-rattling boom, like a sonic boom that shook the house. But there's also another strange phenomenon, and some people reported actually experiencing this. They're called electrophonic meteors.
Hmm.
Sounds sci-fi-like, of course, but these are meteors that, George, generate radio waves that actually are heard in the human ear. They sound like a sizzle. And I remember personal experiences with these, and those that have heard them, they know what they're doing. I saw one of these Leonid meteors, George, 14 years ago, actually create a sonic boom, which is unheard of because those meteors are supposed to disintegrate up in the atmosphere. And then I remember when I was 10 years old, and maybe many listeners may remember, April the 25th of 1966, I witnessed this amazing meteor, one of these electrophonics. You heard the sizzle as it went overhead. So, George, this is fascinating. And if there is any debris from this particular event, the astronomy groups are saying, and meteor collectors, maybe 50 or 60 miles to the west of Jacksonville. So get those metal detectors out, and hey, good luck.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Sky. Stephen Cates' website, drsky.com. Well, as I was talking about at the top of the program, there's a terrorist group called Al-Shabaab. They are in Somalia, and they are calling for attacks on malls around the planet, including the one in Minneapolis, the Mall of America. In a moment, Douglas Hagman joins us. We will talk about this particular story and others next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Back in 2013 at the Westgate Mall in Nairobi, Kenya, there was a terrorist attack there that killed more than 60 people. Now a terrorist group is starting to talk about the same thing, including at the Mall of America in Minneapolis. Security has been beefed up there. I thought it would be very important to have Douglas Hagman with us this hour and also to field some of your calls later on to talk about this situation. Douglas, welcome back. Douglas, of course, from the Homeland Security U.S., not affiliated with Homeland Security, and is also the director of the Northeast Intelligence Network. This story, did it catch people by surprise, Douglas?
Well, not. Hi, George. No, not to the people who have been paying attention. There's always the threat of domestic terrorist attacks by Islamic terrorists here inside the United States. I think the flavor and the target, however, the targets vary according to date, day, time, and public opinion and political climate. But you know, it's interesting to hear, for example, that this particular Islamic terrorist group based out of Somalia, is claiming or is attempting, in at least in my view, to remain relevant by making such a terrorist threat. I'd be more worried about the terrorist threats elsewhere and in other areas. I'm not discounting this, but looking at this, you know, as a whole, I think that we're looking at other threats more important, more imminent, more prescient than this particular threat.
And in this particular case, Douglas, what can you tell us about this Al-Shabaab group out of Somalia?
Well, this group really is an offshoot of the Islamic Courts Union. This is kind of a splinter group, if you will, of other larger groups. The group itself has claimed responsibility and has been accused of being responsible for really the deaths of tens of thousands of people throughout the last decade. The Somalian government have attempted to clean them out of their country. We've had skirmishes with them in various parts of in and around Somalia. I mean, it's kind of a there's an oath to Al Qaeda that they've made, but really over the last, I'll say, 3 or 4 years, it appears that they're not exactly 100% as functional as they were, we'll say, in years prior.
You know what's beginning to baffle me, Douglas, is I see these videos and these pictures from ISIS, for example, where they've got their training camps. They're training little kids now. How are they allowed to do this freely out there with satellite technology and everything else? I don't get it.
Well, none of this makes sense, at least in my view, until we look at the bigger picture. You're exactly right. I mean, the use of children as war assets, and the savagery that we're seeing, the crucifixions, the burning people alive. I mean, it's absolutely astounding. And I was talking to Steve Quayle earlier today, and we were discussing this very topic, this very subject. You know, where's the outrage, and how is this allowed? In our discussion, and as we talked to others familiar with this particular topic, you know, we're going back to following the money. Well, who's funding all of this? In particular, ISIS. Who's funding this? And as we trace things back, it's really interesting to see. Many people think that ISIS was just suddenly created here within the last year or two, perhaps, and that's being generous. But this meteoric rise all of a sudden from ISIS.
And it's so organized.
Well, it is. But when you start following the money and start following the planning and operational planning, we can trace really ISIS back to the mid-2000s, where we were looking at in 2006, for example. And we can see where there is, unfortunately, Western intelligence complicity in the creation of ISIS. If you look at the videos of ISIS, you see them driving Toyota Tundras.
Brand new.
Right. It's almost as if the American military or subcontractors handed over the keys to the trucks. Well, what's that all about?
Well, I guess some of them they did when they went into Iraq. But you're right. But here's an example. You know, when you go out and buy an SUV, you go to a dealer, right? You go to a dealer here in the United States. You order your SUV and you get it. You might even drive off the lot with it. Where are they getting them? I mean, are there SUV dealerships in Iraq, in Syria, that cater only to ISIS? I just, there's something weird going on here, Douglas.
Well, again, looking at this from a broader perspective, this is what Benghazi was all about. This is what the Arab Spring was all about. I contend, and I'll assert, that the Arab Spring was planned years in advance, as well as the takeover of Libya. You can go back into, in fact, the Washington Post from April 10th, 2006, talked about a military pumping up of the role of a Zarqawi PSYOP operation by General Kimmett. The internal briefing documents from the Pentagon Now, all of these pieces of evidence show that there was Western intelligence complicity in the creation of ISIS, in the creation of these terrorist groups, to overthrow Egypt, to overthrow Libya,
and Syria.
And Syria, which is their ultimate objective. And unlike Libya, unlike Egypt, and unlike other countries, including Afghanistan, once Syria goes, once Assad goes, it will explode. It will not implode.
It'll be a disaster.
Exactly.
And they wanted that. They wanted Syria. They wanted Libya. They wanted Egypt. And then the last one left was Iran. And that's what they were going to wait for. That was the jewel, and that was what they were after. And I just, this whole thing, and I'm not saying this as an opinion, I'm saying this as a question. This whole thing seems weird to me. I just don't get it. As you said, when a guy doesn't pay his taxes to the IRS, they clip his bank account. They seize his assets. They shut the poor guy down in a matter of weeks. They don't fool around. How can we allow ISIS to be funneling $2 billion from oil and not do anything about it? Somebody's pulling the oil out of the ground. Somebody's refining it. Somebody's selling it. Somebody's getting paid for it. Somebody's putting it in a bank account. We should be shutting all that down right now.
I agree 100%, and that's a super question. When you look at ISIS, the territory under the control, direct control of ISIS, you're looking at an area bigger than Great Britain, which is just astounding to think of. And their objective is to create a global caliphate. And what's the larger objective here? Not to sound dramatic, but they want to usher in an apocalypse. And the apocalypse will bring forth the Imam Mahdi. And, of course, according to tradition or according to their belief system, that will, of course, allow them to take over the world. And one statement I had an intelligence officer tell me, and he said, always remember this. It's not important what we, the Westerners, believe. It's what they believe that's important. The same with the enemy. I mean, so we have to look at the bigger picture here. And I think we're seeing the groundwork being laid for a 100-year war that was laid out back a number of years ago, as discussed by globalists, as discussed by the Brzezinski and Kissinger.
Well, here's another good question here, Douglas. The guns. Now, you know, I know handguns. I'm not an expert in assault weapons. I don't know if you've looked at these assault weapons that the ISIS members are all holding, but I'd love to know the brand of those weapons. What make are they? Who's making them? And who's giving them the ammunition for those weapons? I don't know what they are. Are they American-made? Are they Russian-made? What are they?
My answer to that, and we've looked at many videos and many images, it depends on who's showing the images in photographs and videos, frankly. You'll find a lot of guns that are Russian. However, where did they come from, I think, is the more important question. I think if you follow the trail of the weapons being used by ISIS right now, you'll see that a lot of these weapons were actually ferreted out of Libya and into Turkey and Jordan during the takeover of Libya by Western forces.
They're bound to run out of ammunition eventually. I mean, they keep shooting up everything.
Well, yeah. I think the military-industrial complex, to coin that or to use that phrase, I think they've got the ammunition covered on this. However, we're looking at this. I think most Americans and most Westerners look at this a little bit too short-sighted. They're looking at ISIS as being this mysterious sudden problem, when in fact they should be looking at this as having been laid out for a long time and really a byproduct, if not the sole product, of a globalist agenda with the intent to destabilize the Middle East. And lastly, I think the objective here, it really is in destabilizing the Middle East and realigning the power base of the Middle East, is to control the oil,
yes,
control the energy.
It's almost as if somebody out there wants this to happen, and they're not stopping it.
Precisely.
Douglas, stay with us. We're going to take a half hour of phone calls with you from lots of interested listeners. This is a huge topic. We're talking about, first and foremost, a terrorist group out of Somalia threatening to set up an attack on the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota. It's been a huge story all day. The mall is beefing up security, obviously, but you know, when a terrorist wants to make his way in, there's not much you can do to stop them. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Douglas Hagman with us as we react to the story of Al-Shabaab calling for an attack on the Mall of America, and we'll get to your calls, too, in just a second. Unfortunately, Douglas, and you know this as well as I and anybody else, you really can't stop a terrorist or a wacko from doing what they're doing. What you have to hope is you eliminate them quickly so they don't cause a lot of damage.
No, indeed. You know, anyone determined enough, and we've seen this throughout history, anyone determined enough is going to execute a terrorist attack, the decapitation of a government, or whatever. The question is, will they be facilitated by someone from the inside, or will they have outside help, or will the situation be assisted through our own? Will our laws be used against us? Will our open borders, as they are, be used against us? And I think we're seeing that the answer is indeed yes.
Good point. All right, let's take some calls here for you. Many people lining up to talk with you. We will go first to Jamestown, Missouri. Dale's with us. Welcome to the program, Dale, on the wild card line.
Very good, George. Listen, I talked to you before. My son died in Iraq in 2006,
yeah,
and I'm fairly agitated about this whole situation. I did some pretty good research at the time. According to Hilaire Belloc, one of the motivations for the explosive rise of Islam, number one, they were pretty unhappy with the Byzantines because of the high tax and restrictions. But look at this. The Muslim armies within 100 years were halfway across France. And according to Belloc, a pretty good historian, one of the things that motivated these guys was the plunder and the booty. It was basically driven by greed to pull these armies together. They could go in, plunder a town, pillage, rape, and they had to give 10 or 15 or 20% to the cause, and the rest of it they could just... And we hear these stories now, and I wonder, as these go back to their fundamentalist roots, what factor does this play, the plunder and the booty, that ISIS is starting to accumulate now? And can it help explain, again, the fairly explosive increase in these guys?
Those are benefits, because most of these people have been unemployed, they had no futures, and Douglas, ISIS is giving them an opportunity to have some money and to do something.
Well, wow. Yeah, you know, to some extent, that's true. However, you know, the way I look at this is to answer the origins of ISIS and the intent of ISIS, I think the booty is secondary to the intent. The intent is a Genghis Khan type of an approach. I think that we're seeing right now, it's management of savagery, and that's what we're looking at. So that we really need to understand the origins, and the origins are not mysterious, nor are they meteoric. They're long-term, and they've been planned. So I think, you know, we tend to like to simplify things, but I think it's a little bit more complex than what we're you know, used to with snippets on the mainstream media.
Where did Saddam Hussein's army go in 2003 when they took off their uniforms and ran away? Are they some of the members here of ISIS?
Well, sure. Once the United States, once the West, once the NATO countries, once the coalition walked away, and in particular the United States backed away, they left the Iraqi army, the very people we trained and we promised to support, they left them without any backup. So one of two things happened, one of three things. They either joined with ISIS, or they ran, fled elsewhere, or they were killed. in fighting. So that's what, and when you think about this occupation, what have we accomplished? That last caller, very interesting point. I mean, losing a family member, a son in Iraq, and then seeing right now the complete overrun of the country and the loss to ISIS. You know, I can't imagine, you know, oh, my goodness, you know, words fail me because that's such a heart, that rips my heart out to hear that.
West of the Rockies, you are on the air with us. Go ahead, Ed. That would be you.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, I can barely hear you. I'm sorry. I'm wondering, Douglas and George, if we shouldn't be considering the capacity that, for example, the Pentagon has for what we call gaming, war gaming, with supercomputing that the average person cannot begin to keep up with from day to day, in terms of putting information into the war gaming, or they call it whatever you like, gaming plan of the entities and the financial resources in the Western world you talk about that are behind this entire scenario in the Middle East of problem, reaction, and solution.
Your reference to the Hegelian dialectic, indeed, but I think we're behind that. When I say we, I'm talking about the globalist agenda, the globalist powers. We're behind that Hegelian dialectic, or they're behind it, I should say. And the war gaming, as evidenced by Henry Kissinger's 100-year war gaming plan back in 1982 or 1983, this has been going on. And I think what we're seeing, with all due respect, I think what we're seeing is the product of that gaming, a little, some of which has gone awry, most of which, however, is right on target, because I do believe that the ultimate objective here is a constant perpetual state of war, which is totally diametrically opposite of where I was, where I was mentally a dozen years ago, mm-hmm. or even 10 years ago.
Doug, would you agree, though, that something's strange here? The oil flowing, the bank accounts, the weaponry, the ammunition, the organization. I mean, this stuff doesn't just happen overnight. This thing has been planned for a long time.
Oh, sure. And everything's on record where Arab Spring was planned years before it actually happened. People think it was a spontaneous uprising. No, it wasn't. It was planned long before, between the French and the British and the United States. And there are email traffic and cables to support that. Same with Libya. Same with the other countries as well. You know, we go back to the various documents, the operational plans from Gladio way back when to even PNAC and so on. Very well established that everything that we're seeing play out right now is being played out, is being gamed, is being conducted for a specific purpose. And that purpose is to totally upset and destroy and to realign the power base, not just in the Middle East, but across the entire globe.
Wildcard Line, you are on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, this is Bill in West Hartford,
Connecticut.
Hi, Douglas, two quick points. I'll ask them together. Have you comment on both? Point number one, the Republican-controlled U.S. House of Representatives and U.S. Senate has, as of tonight, not voted to fund Homeland Security. And if they don't fund Homeland Security within 4 days by Friday night, Homeland Security will not have money, and we will be somewhat defenseless, if not totally defenseless. And point number two, it's not just the Islamic religion who has a fundamentalist end times with the 12th Mahdi coming out of a well. Fundamentalist Christianity also thinks with Revelations, the rapture, Jesus coming back, that some of the fundamentalist Christians in the world think that there should be a World War III and that Jesus would come back. So they have their fundamentalist end times beliefs also that could bring on World War III. So when you have both sides, Christians and Jews and Islam and Jewish people too, talking about Mashiach on the Jewish side or Jesus or Mahdi, that's a recipe for World War III.
Well, indeed, it's a recipe for World War III. On the other hand, I have not seen any type of aggressive movements by the Christian fundamentalists against the Islamic fundamentalists in any type of aggressive or advancing state. What we see is Christians being burned, Christians being crucified over in the Middle East. Now, how can, I'm not even sure how to even answer that beyond the fact that there really is no expectation, or at least not an active representation by Christianity to bring forth an apocalyptic scenario as you described. However, on the other side, there's clear documentation. There's a clear cut, in at least in my view, agenda to bring forth the Iman Mahdi and to bring forth the apocalyptic end times and chaos. That's a stated goal of Chaudhry over there in the UK. So, whereas I have not heard that from any Christian fundamentalists.
Jim Kallstrom, of course, who headed up the piecing together of TWA Flight 800, literally, and was the assistant director of the FBI's New York office, he says that the FBI right now, with this episode of Somalia and al-Shabaab and ISIS, has a huge job in front of them. I would agree, Douglas, that if that's the case, if there are groups out there that are planning to do things in the United States, we're going to have our hands full.
Oh, I totally agree with that as well. But on the other hand, I think we must not downplay our ability to defend. I mean, we have one of the most extensive surveillance apparatus in the entire globe, on the planet. I mean, we can listen to, pinpoint cell phone calls, track everyone. So my question is, and this is really a question, Are we to believe, is the public to believe, that the United States security apparatus, the NSA, the most powerful intelligence agency on the planet, that we cannot address this and fight this? Yet we can pinpoint a dope dealer outside of a mall in Florida, but we can't pinpoint the biggest threat to our freedom?
We can't, or we won't.
That's and therein lies a rub.
Mike is with us, first time caller, Long Island, New York. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on the air with us.
Good morning. I hope you can hear me.
Sure thing, Mike. Loud and clear.
Okay, thank you. The question for the expert on ISIS is: this is my concern. There's a social group based in the United States of America. I believe it's called Sisters of ISIS. It might be Daughters of ISIS. Is there any possible connection or maybe funds from this group to them, ISIS?
Well, yeah, I know what you're referring to, and certainly what the funding to ISIS is it's multifaceted. There are a lot of, and it's nebulous too. You're looking at money coming from other countries, including Qatar or Qatar, Saudi Arabia, even all throughout the Middle East, all various countries throughout the Middle East. But inside the United States, one of the biggest proponents or one of the biggest facilitators of ISIS is really two steps or three steps away from the Muslim Brotherhood here, operational inside the United States, and that suggests because of this particular administration, this administration, their relationship with the Muslim Brotherhood, and they're propping up the Muslim Brotherhood, for example, in Egypt. What does that say about the allocation of funds? And don't forget, right before Morsi was removed in Egypt, the Obama administration offered them or provided them $60 million in order to fight against Assad under the authority of assisting the anti-Assad or freedom fighters in Syria. So it's a very convoluted money trail. But yes, I mean, there are organizations here in the United States as well as elsewhere that do the money does end up in the coffers of these organized groups like ISIS.
Where does Israel fit into this, Douglas? I mean, there they are, one of our allies, yet there's some incredible tension there between President Obama and Benjamin Netanyahu. It is there. It is quite obvious. What's going on with Israel?
Well, at the risk of being really vilified and getting a whole bunch of emails, I'll say this. Israel does not have, Israel has got dirty hands in this as well, okay, to be fair. The Mossad and the political factions that exist, the criminal cabals that exist inside Israel's government, they're actually helping ISIS, if you can believe that. They're actually helping to destabilize Syria. They're actually caring for in their hospitals some ISIS fighters, and that's very difficult to believe, but it's based on documentation that's reliable and authenticated. Now, they of course are in a very inferior position, or at least that's what they're proclaiming, and I believe that to be true. I mean, they're in the fight of their lives with respect to Iran, but where does it fit in here? They're playing really all sides of the war as we are, and people need to understand that. But there's a difference between, the Jews, the covenant Jews, and, of course, the political movement of the Zionist movement. And we have to really make that distinction.
Are we headed for a third world war?
Oh, we're there, yes. Not headed for it. We're in a third world war. It just hasn't turned hot yet.
Are we talking about nukes?
Absolutely. You know, and again, we have to, the Third World War really began decades ago, and really it's right now we're fighting Russia. Russia is probing our air defenses. We are looking at the asymmetrical warfare using oil as a weapon. People are enjoying it here in the United States, cheap oil. That's great at the pumps. Oh, that's great. But what's behind that? When gasoline, for example, was $4 or $5 a gallon here 5-6 years ago, and now it's less than half of that. Well, oil is being used, energy is being used as a weapon against the Russian economy, and they are responding in kind via asymmetrical methods as well against the United States. This is the Third World War or Fourth World War, depending on which, is semantics. But the bottom line is we're in a Third World War, or we're in a World War right now by proxy.
Let's go to Jameson in Denver. We'll get a call in here before the break. Jameson, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call this evening.
Sure,
Mr.
Sir.
Hagman, pleasure to speak with you. I've listened to you and your son many times on the Internet. Had a great show, too. But, I just wanted to bring up the possible Masonic power structure being behind the whole Third World War. And Albert Pike, I believe it was to Giuseppe Manzini, wrote about these Third World Wars destroying Germany and destroying Britain and however it played out. And then this Third World War that's supposed to happen. And, there's a picture of Obama with the hands around the presidential seal wearing a Masonic ring. And it just makes me think he's probably playing along to the same order. And, what power does these secret societies, the Jesuits and the Masons, have behind this whole globalist scheme?
40 seconds, Douglas.
Well, they are the power behind this. They are the string pullers. They are the, as I like to refer to them, the Illuminists, the globalists. When I say the globalists, these are the people I'm referring to. This is a much bigger, I'll tell you what, the lie is not only different at every level, the lie is much bigger than people want to believe. It's not, everything is not what it seems to be. And these are the very people that are orchestrating and have been orchestrating for generations what we are seeing today.
Douglas, keep in touch with us as we watch this other story unfold, as we pray that it should not unfold in this country. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Brooks Agnew as we talk about weather wars, the hollow earth, and so much more.